Have you ever noticed how Americans hype everything? Is that something only I notice, or is that, do you see that out there? Like football, we're getting close to what's called the Super Bowl. Notice the Super Bowl. It's just a game, of course, but it's the Super Bowl. In Canada, the CFL has the Grey Cup, but in the NFL, it's the Super Bowl. Same with Major League Baseball. They call their championship, anybody know? The World Series, even though baseball is essentially an American game, right? I know it's played in Japan and such, and in Caribbean and Canada too, and a few other places, but it's an American game. But they call the championship the World Series. Now, the World Cup, that's a legitimate world event, but World Series for essentially a game mainly played in one country? Hype. With that said, something did happen back in 1776 in the United States that was extremely special, and it's not just hype. Representatives from all over the 13 colonies came together in Philadelphia, and they made a declaration of independence, a claim of independence from Great Britain and the British Crown. And it's not the Declaration of Independence itself that was so extraordinary, it was the reasons given in that Declaration for Independence that made it so. And right at near the beginning of this declaration, it says this, and it's up on the screen there. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the American Declaration of Independence asserts that every person is endowed with a basic human dignity. This human dignity is what gives people the right to self-determination. And this is what made that direct declaration back in 1776 so remarkable. The right to self-determination individually and collectively derives from the recognition of a basic human dignity that lives in all people. And this understanding of human dignity has influenced and shaped the whole world for the past 250 years. And we should never underestimate its influence, even here in Canada. What's interesting is that in 1776, even though it says all men are created equal, only about 20% of white males were included in that all. 80% of white males were excluded. And of course, 100% of males of other ethnicities were excluded. And of course, all women, 100% of women, were excluded too. And the main reason was because you had to own property to be a citizen. If you didn't own property, you weren't considered part of the all. But I thought the Declaration said that all men, all people, every person was created equal, endowed with unalienable rights. There seems to have been a discrepancy between the Declaration of Independence, what was declared, and what was the reality on the ground. And this tension between reality and the ideal has been at work in American society ever since. And there's been a slow expansion over time of the including of or expanding the understanding of all. Initially, it started off with 20% of all males. By 1860, it included all males, all white males, I should say. And then after the American Civil War with the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, that all was to include all males of all ethnicities who were over the age of 21. And then, of course, in the late 19th and early 20th century, that all was expanded to include women, too. And that journey is still on in America today, to this very day, and also in the world as well. You know, when Martin Luther King got going with the civil rights movement back in the 1950s, his basic argument with his country, with the nation, with America, was that the American Negro was entitled to the same basic human dignity that white folks enjoyed. That was his essential argument with America, was that all people enjoyed these unalienable rights because they are human. And there we see a fatal weakness in the Declaration of Independence. As brilliant as it is, as exceptional as it is, it falters on the definition of who is a human being. Who gets to decide who is human, too? If you're not fully human, then you do not enjoy those unalienable rights to liberty and freedom and the pursuit of happiness and the self-determination that comes out of that dignity. That's exactly what the Nazis did back in the 1920s and 30s. They simply denied the Jews that they were fully human. That's how they got around the question of human dignity. They called Jews Untermenschen. It literally means underman, or we would say subhuman. The Nazis said the Jews were subhuman and therefore could be denied basic human dignity and everything that flows out of that. And not only Jews, but the Slavs, Gypsies, the mentally and physically handicapped, Blacks and other ethnicities, anybody the Nazis didn't like, they could just cancel out on the basis that these people were something less than full human beings. There was a whole category of people that simply didn't rise to being fully human in Nazi ideology. And being subhuman, they didn't qualify for consideration. Their human dignity didn't matter because they were not human. And that was true in the Soviet Union as well. Stalin killed more people than Hitler did. It's kind of interesting historical fact that we gloss over today. Those deaths were justified on the grounds that there is no such thing as human dignity. It doesn't exist, and therefore there's no right to self-determination. People could be dispensed with without consideration in Stalin's Russia. The Japanese in the 1920s and 30s and 40s subjugated large swaths of Asia, and they brutalized many Asian societies because anyone who was so weak to be conquered wasn't considered to be fully human. They were subhuman, slaves in essence, and did not deserve to have their human dignity recognized. Human dignity was something you earned and defended and died for. And that's why Allied prisoners in Japanese internment camps were treated so poorly. Having surrendered in battle, they gave up any claim to their human dignity. In Canada, the rough treatment of Indigenous peoples, the treatment of Chinese laborers, the internment of Japanese Canadians and others, derived from the unwillingness of many to recognize the full humanity of these people. It was never done as explicitly in Nazi Germany. Was more subtle, phrased in legal language, yet there was still this underlying belief at work that certain human groups in our society were not fully human and therefore had no claim to the full expanse of human dignity and the right to self-determination that comes from that dignity. Where does the notion of human dignity arise from? What is the justification for such a thing as human dignity? The Romans certainly didn't see it that way. Human dignity applied to some of the Romans, but no one else. When Julius Caesar went about conquering Gaul, modern France, there was no notion of general human dignity at play in his thinking. It had nothing to do with his decision to invade and conquer Gaul. And they say about 1 million people died through battle and starvation because of that invasion and conquering. If you'd been a Gaul and you'd come during those years and you'd confronted Caesar with your claim to human dignity, he would have looked at you in complete amazement. Who are you? I don't think Caesar would have even understood your argument. Likely you would have been dispatched and become one of the 1 million dead. The Mongols had no problem sacking cities and executing all the citizens of that place. There was no sense of human dignity at play in their decision-making. It never entered into their calculations. The whole slave trade from beginning to end was a complete denial of human dignity. People seem to forget that black slaves were generally captured by other black African tribes. They didn't recognize the human dignity of the people they were selling. The white European slavers didn't recognize the human dignity of the people they were transporting across the Atlantic, and people who bought the slaves didn't either. So we see another weakness in the Declaration of Independence. It starts off with these words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Throughout human history, the truth is that human dignity and the right to self-determination that comes from it is not self-evident. There's nothing self-evident in history about human dignity. So where does this idea of human dignity come from? What is the basis for the idea that all men, all people, everyone is created equal? That we're all equal before life? What is the basis for certain unalienable rights such as life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, which is really, in essence, the right to self-determination? Where does it come from? Because it's not self-evident. No matter what the Declaration of Independence says, it is not self-evident. And the answer is found in the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration says that human dignity comes from the Creator. It is God who bequeaths to us dignity and therefore gives us certain unalienable rights, which leads to the basic right to self-determination. But where does this idea come from? Where does this idea that human beings are endowed by their Creator with a basic dignity and certain unalienable rights that come from it? Where does it come from? And you have to go back to the beginning of Genesis, to the moment in chapter 1 that focuses on the human creation story. That is the source of the basic idea. It says this in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 28. God spoke and said, "Let us make human beings in our image, make them reflecting our nature, so they can be responsible for the fish in the sea and the birds in the air, the cattle, and yes, earth itself and every animal that moves on the face of earth." And God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female. The idea in Genesis is that God, the Creator, has endowed human beings with a dignity that comes from His imprint into us. The source of human dignity is therefore the basic imprint of our Creator, of God's identity that's now been placed in us, imprinted in us. We are now the reflection of God's glory, almost like God Himself. It's the divine image which grounds human identity and gives us basic human dignity. In 1776 Philadelphia, when the Declaration of Independence was written, human dignity was self-evident because the basic Christian worldview that shaped those who wrote it was at work in the writing of that document. They saw the world through the lens of Christ. It was self-evident to them. But as history has shown us before and afterwards, it's not a self-evident truth. It's a truth that one has to go and look for in life. It's a revealed truth. It only becomes self-evident to us as we grow into seeing the world through the God perspective. You can believe in a basic or foundational human dignity as a personal opinion or as a personal belief. You don't have to be a Christian to believe that, but what grounds that belief is the real question. What makes it real and more than just an opinion? What makes an opinion that people have human dignity, a belief in that, what makes it become a self-evident truth that others should acknowledge and respect? If you'd been in Germany in 1939 and gone to a senior Nazi official arguing for the dignity of your Jewish neighbors, they would have simply dismissed your idea out of hand. Jews were untermenschen. Case closed. In fact, you would have probably been arrested and thrown in that same concentration camp as your Jewish neighbor for arguing your own personal opinion. From a Christian point of view, human dignity is a universal truth because our Bible says this is how God created us. God made us in His likeness, imprinted His identity upon you and me, on everyone. We live with the imprint of God upon us, the divine image. All people do. All people do. This is the truth that Jesus confirmed in His own work. You cannot really understand Jesus' mission and ministry outside this point of view. His whole ministry is predicated on recognizing, identifying, and celebrating the divine image in people, in all people. That's why he was often found amongst the tax collectors and prostitutes, the reprobates and outcasts. He believed and understood the full implications of human dignity in all people. Even people the society had determined were subhuman. Jesus' purpose was to restore people to their full dignity as children of God. People who bore the divine image, people of dignity who had the imprint of the Creator upon their hearts and life. And his call to us, the Lord's call to us, is to stop engaging in behaviors that reduce our own dignity or the dignity of others. The whole Sermon on the Mount could be summed up as a call to live out our lives in recognizing, identifying, and celebrating the divine image in each other. That image that was implanted in us. Jesus died on the cross because of his absolute commitment to recognize, identify, and celebrate the human dignity of all people, even those who tormented and tortured him, even those who denied him his basic dignity. The book of James is all about the importance of those who follow Jesus in recognizing, identifying, and celebrating the human dignity of all people. If you read the James as a whole, that's the focus of James. If we are going to seriously follow Christ, then lifting up this basic human dignity is an essential part of our common life, our common ministry here at Trillium as the people of God. We do it the same way that Jesus did it. People who look differently than we do, people who act differently than we do, people who have different customs than we do, people who eat different foods or think differently than we do. There are so many reasons to deny people their full humanity. And it seems like God has set up a two-step process for us. He's placed the divine image in us, and now he's asked us to go seek it in each other, to look for that imprint in each other. He asks us today, even here at Trillium, to seek out the divine image in each other. As they say, that's the focus of James' letter to the church, to seek the divine image in each other. That's why he says, lead with your ears, follow up with your tongue, and let anger straggle along in the rear. See, because we're on a journey to discover each other's holy dignity. And you can't do that if you're leading with your tongue, scoping out and determining what the world should look like in your own estimation. It's almost certainly tongue will lead us to present our own ideas about how life works and who is and who's not fully human. If you're the one that gets to decide this, it's almost certain that anger will be a key element in your thinking process. It will be your anger which will delineate who's in and who's out. As James says, God's righteousness does not grow from human anger. James asks the hidden question, who made you or me God? Who gave us the right to decide who's in and who's out? Who gave us the right to decide who's entitled to dignity and self-determination and who's not? The Nazis and the communists, they denied people the right to self-determination because they didn't recognize people's human dignity. The reason they didn't recognize the dignity is because they didn't believe in God. There was no God, so there was no source. There was no source that implanted people with this basic dignity. There's no authority of Scripture. They decided who was in and who was out, and that led to the death of millions, tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions of people. Certainly the suffering and torment of hundreds of millions of people. The failure of our Canadian government and our Canadian society in dealing with First Nations peoples rests on the same foundational mistake. We did not recognize the full holy dignity of First Nations peoples. We did not acknowledge the divine image that was alive in them. And we denied them the right to self-determination that comes from the dignity of being made in the likeness of God. And we're still dealing with historic problems of our past because of this. James says, so throw all spoiled virtue and cancerous evil in the garbage. In simple humility, let our gardener God landscape you with the word, making a salvation garden of your life. See, because it all comes down to how we look at each other. It's so easy to remove human dignity from people we don't like, from people we hold in contempt, from those who we want to use for our own benefit, as something less than fully human, as someone who is not bearing the divine image. That's why James says, don't fool yourself into thinking that you're a listener when you're not, when you're anything but letting the word go in one ear and out the other. Act on what you hear. You know, it's a historic interest or curiosity. When they wrote the Declaration of Independence in 1776, they had millions of slaves in the United States. I thought the Declaration said that all men are considered equal, all people considered equal. Well, why weren't all the slaves freed in 1776 then? How's that possible? Well, we're all blind, aren't we, at times? Because we're going to assert our right to decide who's in and who's out, even if we lay out the principle of all. James says, whoever catches a glimpse of the revealed counsel of God, the free life, even out of the corner of their eye, and sticks with it, is no distracted scatterbrain, but a man or a woman of action. That person will find delight and affirmation in the action. See, we're on a journey to discover each one's holy dignity. And if we even capture just a glimpse of it in each other, if we just capture a small glimpse of it, we are set free. We're set free. We're set free in our relationships with each other. We can now truly love each other. We're free to love in the way that God has always intended us to love each other. As James says, anyone who sets himself up as religious by talking a good game is self-deceived. This kind of religion is hot air and only hot air. Real religion, the kind that passes muster before God the Father, is this: reach out to the homeless and loveless in their plight and guard against corruption from the godless world. A godless world which will want to encourage you to assert yourself in deciding who's in and who's out. If we say that all people have human dignity because they're endowed with the Creator's image, they bear the divine image, but we don't actually treat people in this way, then we're frauds. Our basic mission at Trillium is its essence to awaken the Christ-like, to awaken the divine image in each other, to seek out and celebrate the human dignity that lies in everyone. And it all rests on being made in the image of God. That's why we say at Trillium, as our preeminent core value, offer friendship and fellowship to all. There's that all word again. All men are created equal. Offer friendship and fellowship to all. Not a few, not some, not many, not most, but to all. We say this not because we're nice people at Trillium, although we are, but because we are committed to the basic Christian practice at Trillium of identifying, recognizing, and celebrating the divine image that lives in all people, all people. So let's not just speak these words today in church. Let's not just put them up on a banner there at the very top of our core values, but let's act them out in our lives with each other and then with the world around us. If we recognize and identify and celebrate each person's dignity, then we are living out God's commandment to love one another.